Conciliums with Pete and Charlie.
I'm Pete.
I'm Charlie.
The unity of knowledge.
That and a whole bunch of caffeine is what's going to get us through this.
Da, da, da. That's your favorite intro.
Is it?
Yeah.
I do.
And it's,
I do
it's
like
followed,
the dramatic.
It's followed by the clearing of the throat. Don't do that. So you said Pokemon Go when you came in here today.
Oh, my God. I walked into class the other day, and I said, how many people are playing Pokemon Go? Everyone in my senior capstone design class.
It's Pokemon Go?
I was not a fan.
Because I think I used Pokemon to make it fast. Maybe that's not the right way to say it.
It all comes from Japan, right? What is the correct pronunciation?
I don't know. I'm asking.
I still argue over Pechacucha, so who really knows? Yeah, I asked a Japanese colleague of mine, what is the Japanese word for chit-chat, which literally is what that translates
phrase,
into.
The Japanese phrase.
He said pechikuchi. He didn't say pachachka. Pachachka sounds like, what's the other word I hate? Tchotchkes?
You hate that word?
What is that word?
I believe that's the word for little things, little prizes or
things,
gifts or
I just don't like the word. It just sounds freaky.
Okay.
I mean, just like a lot of people claim folks don't like the word moist.
Moist, for some reason, bothers people.
Moist does not, but tchotchkes does.
We just lost a listener.
Because we said moist.
And we said it again. So how many kids are playing?
All of them.
PK Go.
All of them.
Really?
They're all playing it. I mean,
So did you get any, what would you say? Did you get any self-reflection out of those folks? Did you get any sort of, this is why I'm playing it?
No.
I imagine
we did no reflective learning module in my class on Pokemon Go. We talked about the production of demisting agents from alcohol solutions of polyisobutylene, which is what the topic was at hand.
Oh, shit. A 34-year-old.
That's good. You need to come to my class and say that in the morning.
A 34-year-old told me that Pokemon Go was not part of their childhood.
Well, Pokemon Go wasn't, but
Pokemon wasn't. Pokemon, right. No, they said that they missed Pokemon, that it did not happen for them.
Yeah, so it missed me too, but my students are in their early 20s.
So Pokemon.
And my 16-year-old son likes it. I don't know. This is a time for declaring that you need to take the good with the bad.
1995. Crazy.
And you...
You need to take the good with the bad?
Yeah.
Wait, we just dove in, didn't we?
The idea... There have been lots of these games before, and I believe this one is loosely based on sort of a geocaching-style game called Ingress that actually colleagues of mine have played.
When you say based, like... It uses that tech, right? It
was the idea of going around and finding stuff is not new.
No.
But what has made this
caching was a big thing.
What has made this the single most, what's the word? The single most downloaded app ever in the history of the planet is the fact that they juxtapose two things. A popular...
Well,
sort of cartoon and
Ingress
game.
Is an augmented reality, massively multiplayer online location-based game.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just read that off of Wikipedia. What is Pokemon Go? Let's see, Pokemon Go. What do they call that if it's the same? Is a free-to-play, location-based, augmented reality mobile game. So they take the role-playing out of it.
They put it on mobile devices.
Yeah.
And you just go around and find these certain things. It is addictive. I mean, people are going crazy.
Well,
listen,
no one needs to hear from us what the game is. But why do you feel like it's good with the bad? What bothers you?
Oh.
And why did you notice? First off, why did you notice that everyone's playing it? I saw a lot of tweets and Facebook posts and then, like, just extra little things. People like, Pokemon Go is making people walk into the street. And I'm like, okay, what is this all about? So that's how I found out.
Yeah, I probably read about it in the New York Times.
But how did you discover that all your students were?
Well, I guess I read an article about it, and I just asked one morning. I'm that kind of a weird instructor that comes in and just asks to keep my finger on the pulse of the youth of America.
Did you know that they were all going to say yes, or did you kind of
I figured
wonder?
A large number were because I saw one of my faculty colleagues who said he was playing it over the weekend. And I thought, that's it. The planet is doomed.
And you don't like it? You're not...
No. What bothers me the most about society is that we judge things. We're like, I don't, you know, we're like the church lady. I don't like it. And we just, you know, we're like, you're bad if you do this.
Okay, I'm going to.
And I think that's wrong.
I apologize for the late night Waffle House nature of what is about to transpire.
Okay. That won't be good until you actually say it in front of a select subcommittee of the Senate. But, Madam Senator, I apologize for the late night Waffle House nature of my response.
Dude, that's what society is judging things and declaring some things, you know.
Well, then I'm going to judge that and
say,
I don't like it.
I mean, that's what laws are. Like, that's why we have laws.
If something harms your fellow human being or severely pollutes the environment or hurts innocent animals, then it's wrong. But if you do something, and I'm usually talking about sports or games or silly things,
right?
Someone is going to think they're silly. I guarantee it.
So when you say,
and that's okay.
So why is the judgment of, you know, keeping things level and cool is okay with you, but then judgment on like social shaming, what's the difference? I have my own answer.
We all have a game or a distraction that we do, whether it's, you know, baking scones or playing golf, right? So I occasionally play golf. I'm a horrible golfer.
Do you occasionally bake scones?
No, I've never baked a scone. I do like to bake them.
I'm so sad. I really wish we could go for a scone right now. Well, no, just that if you were like, I bake scones.
Simultaneously.
I play golf.
That would be good.
I know you'd carry a little easy bake oven.
George Carlin was right when he called golf the biggest waste of prime real estate. It really is the stupidest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. You hit this little ball, you know, half a mile and try to get into a little hole. It's just dumb. But it's evolved through our culture. I don't know how. And if that's what you do, that's what you do. I mean, it's not that big of a deal. You're not evil because you play golf or because you engage in curling or Pokemon Go or some other, you know, Magic the Gathering.
Can you empathize with the people who think that that's wrong, though? I mean, you said golf.
Yes, I can.
Golf's a waste of real estate.
Right.
And by real estate, that's one thing. That's sort of the joke of, oh, these guys are playing golf. These guys, quote, guys, these yuppies are playing golf on what they could have turned into a shopping mall, right? That's sort of
or farmland or a park
or
nature.
But I'm saying that this to say it's a waste of real estate being the actual, you know, the business.
Yeah, I don't think that's what George Carlin meant. I think he meant waste of resources.
He knew what he was saying. He knew that he was using a phrase that had a particular, because he didn't say it as big as waste of land or natural resources.
Good point.
He said real estate.
Rather insightful.
He knew what his deal was. Anyway.
Welcome to Judging George Carlin.
I'm not judging George Carlin. I'm just saying that I'm assessing.
Next up, the 7 dirty words you can't say on TV.
All right. Now I don't know what my point was. Let's start again.
Oh, you did that to me all the time, though.
Sure.
Okay.
So
your point was, can I empathize with people that
right.
just are haters?
Okay. Yeah.
Yes, I can. Because when I...
But particular to Pokemon Go, can you empathize with people who are like, why are you doing this?
Yeah, because I hang out with a lot of old guys who just want to sit there and pull a Wilfred Brimley. Well, these kids are wasting their time, you know?
Yeah, but can you empathize with that? Because like with the real estate joke or with the golf thing, it's like, oh my God, look at the space.
Yes, it's very enjoyable to judge people.
There are people who are homeless and can't eat food, right? And so it's like, yeah, let's have a place where people can be and...
What, do you want them to graze on a golf course?
Yes, that's what I'm suggesting. I think that they and the goats
a lot
should
of
graze
roughage.
Together. Or if you say that it's like, if you have a problem with people playing football, you can say stuff about tax breaks for stadiums and concussions, right?
Yeah.
So then Pokemon Go, it would seem that mostly what people have a problem with is that it's childish.
My entire life is childish.
Well, yeah,
I like to
bit.
Say childlike. My wife uses the term childish.
Well, childlike is when you want to say that it's a good thing, and childish is when you say it once.
Right.
When you want to say it's a bad thing.
So they have
thing.
A different connotation. No, but I think everybody needs a fun little distraction, and whether it's, you know, The Bachelorette on TV, which is just stupid. But if that's what you enjoy, if you know. But everything is someone's going to think everything's stupid, right? Whether it's golf, tennis, video games, Pokemon Go. And that's okay. If you enjoy it and it distracts you enough to relieve the stress of your hurried day, good. That's okay. I think if you do anything to obsession where you no longer can keep a job and pay the bills, then that's bad, right? if you can't live other aspects of your life. So I've got no problem with Pokemon Go. What I find interesting about Pokemon Go from an innovation entrepreneurial sense.
Wait a minute. What was that little path you started to drip down? You were like, you know, basically you're saying, well, if you're doing crack and you're trapped in your apartment and not leaving it, then it's a problem. Is that what you just said?
Yeah, where that line is, I don't know. That's tough. Right, so if you're trapped in your apartment and you can't function.
And by trapped, I just mean you don't want to go outside.
Right.
Although there's a lot of people who don't want to leave their apartment. Like, that's
With the bad. The good news is my son, who's utterly addicted to video games and sits there playing them all the time, now has to go outside and walk.
Yeah.
So
what do you think of that?
I think people are getting a little exercise. Just please don't walk into traffic. That's what I'm saying. Don't. And it was already bad before we got here. You'd walk across the campus here at Georgia Tech, and you would see students with their noses buried in their phone anyway for whatever it is, videos,
whenever I
Snapchat.
Become suddenly aware that I'm just looking at my phone while walking or sitting, yeah. I do feel embarrassed for myself. I have this sudden moment of, oh, man. And when I'm walking,
I'll stop.
And everybody that I can see is looking at their phone.
Yeah.
I feel a moment of wanting to yell, hey. Everybody stop!
Just Sheboygan.
But also, I mean, why should I care? Like, if everybody was reading a book, I would feel a little bit lighthearted. I'd be like,
oh my God, library snobbish arrogance.
This is what I'm saying.
At least you're admitting to it. At least you're copping to it, which is more than most people will do.
Well, I just know it's just.
But it's not good for you to be walking and staring at stuff at the same time.
I can read and walk when I know the path I'm walking.
Okay, but those people ran into me yesterday.
Yeah, I think because they're not used to the process. And also, there's that random quality of, like, if you see if the creature is close by, you're jumping around.
Yeah,
as opposed to
when you're nearby.
If you're reading your Twitter, you're going through your Twitter feed, yeah. And you're walking from your workplace on campus to your parking lot, you know your path, you know? And and people know not to run into
each
other.
Well, are you glancing up occasionally? If you're glancing up occasionally.
I don't know. This doesn't matter, right?
It doesn't. If my biggest problem is some high school kid who's here for our facet orientation
bumps into me, right. I mean,
did have to say, dudes, watch where you're going a couple of times.
Which is a totally appropriate response.
It's not so bad.
But yeah, so if I saw everyone with their nose in a book, I would feel kind of like, hey, cool, everyone's bettering themselves. But if I see everybody looking at their phone.
What if you examine the literature? Maybe they're not bettering themselves.
That's right. And, well, there's a certain amount of, no one wrote a book about
crap.
I think
they did. I think I've read a few.
They totally wrote books about crap, but no one just threw up their new review of Ghostbusters, the all female cast, into a book and then published it and then got it into everybody's hands. You know,
right.
But if you're looking at your phone, you might be reading someone's
a post or a
racist,
blog that
sexist
just was a stream of
what do you call it? Objection to the new Ghostbusters kind of movie.
Have you seen the new Ghostbusters movie?
I haven't.
Have you read reviews of it?
I have.
And how are the reviews?
Well, they're split. And generally, it seems like if you don't have a conceptual problem with the movie being remade or done again with female leads.
Right.
Then it was a funny movie.
Okay.
And it was, like, if you like Paul Feig or Feig, then you like his movies, and this would be fun, and they're pretty cool. And that woman, Kate McKinnon.
Who is Kate McKinnon?
She's a Saturday Night Live player, and she's the kind of geek out weird one.
Yeah.
Like, she's awesome. That's the general review.
Okay. And this stars Melissa McCarthy and Kristen Wiig.
No, it stars those four women. Melissa McCarthy, Kate McKinnon, I think that's her name. Leslie, forgot her name. And then... Kristen Wiig. Anyway, the point is, like, it's a perfectly fine movie. Unless you have an issue with some kind of feminine or feminist agenda, and you think that the fact that there's the four women in Ghostbusters is somehow ruining your childhood, or is some kind of explicit misandrist statement, you know, by Hollywood or something like that.
Misandrist, is that the opposite of misogynist?
Yes, misandrist is man-hating.
Did you just make that up?
I did not. I did not, and I never would.
By tomorrow.
I mean,
good morning, and welcome to Big Words with Charlie Bennett.
Because it would be misfallacy if I made it up. That's how I would make up the opposite of misogyny.
Okay.
Anyway, the point is, if you have a problem with what they've done, Ghostbusters wise culturally, then you know you didn't like the movie and it's an affront. And it seems like if you don't have a problem with that, the movie's kind of funny. And if you actually really enjoy the thing that they've done, you know, remake a beloved movie with a gender swapped cast to basically balance out the sheet, right? You know, like here's another version of that that's all female.
Yeah.
If you think that's cool, then you really like the movie. You know, it didn't disappoint.
Mm-hmm.
All that to say, I look forward to seeing it, but I will see it at home because I have small children. At this point, there's no way that I'm going to go.
I understand.
My wife and I are not going to spend $150 to go see a movie. That's just not going to happen.
See, I don't have to bring kids with me.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, but not even bring kids. Like, that's the sitter. You know,
oh, yeah, I have no sitter.
And
yeah,
the movie
sitter
tickets,
is expensive.
You know,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I mean, I'm like, you know, tickets and popcorn are bad enough, but no sitter. And sometimes we're so far behind, we'll see it for a couple of bucks at the cheap theater if we wait a few months.
Yeah, that's okay. Anyway, so I'll see it at home.
Okay.
And I look forward to seeing it because I have enjoyed all of the Paul Feig movies that I've seen, mm-hmm. right?
What other
is that how you say his name?
To
I don't know how you say his name, but
I don't know.
Bridesmaids, The Heat, Spy, and now Ghostbusters. And I think he made another one, too.
Oh, okay. So he likes Melissa McCarthy, then.
Yeah, she's been in, I think, all of his movies.
Heat. Which one was
that
Heat?
The Heat, I think, is what it was called. Heat, starring Robert De Niro and Val Kilmer.
Great action,
is also
police
a great movie.
Thriller. I like
and
that
I think
movie.
Then Heat or The Heat is with Sandra Bullock.
Oh,
and
I laughed
McCarthy.
So hard I almost wet
one, yeah.
myself.
Exactly.
I do like his films.
It's just funny stuff.
And I like those actresses. And I look forward to seeing it as well.
But to go back to the point, so the internet is a way for people to self-publish very quickly their mm-hmm. immediate hateful thoughts, right, in a
and
very anonymous way.
And sometimes ignorant and narrow-minded. But what you're saying is if someone published it, there was at least a bit of reflection and thought
by a publisher.
No,
more like if someone actually got from the process of I wrote these words and then we got them to a, you know, trade paperback, perfect binding kind of thing. A lot of resources went in, and there was a gatekeeping function to that.
Yeah.
But the glorious thing about, you know, internet communications is that there's no gatekeeping, and there's no...
And that's good and bad.
It's good and bad.
Right.
It's very good when it comes to diversity of voice and freedom of communication, mm-hmm. right? Not freedom of speech. That's a different thing. Freedom of communication. It's awesome. It's terrible when people can, you know, like eggs. There's eggs on Twitter spouting all kinds of stuff.
What do you mean eggs?
If you don't put an avatar into
your
Twitter
profile,
it's
just
a little egg.
Yeah, I've seen the eggs.
So if you're a person who is just like, I'm on Twitter and now I can say all this stuff about, you know, black people and Jews, which is one of the...
I believe I do have a representative avatar on my Twitter.
So. Yeah, a person. Yeah.
Well, people know who I am. Actually, my Twitter handle is my first name and last name. So you can
find
me.
For the same reason that Twitter could be a tool of revolution, mm-hmm. you know, for the Arab Spring, it can also be a tool of white supremacy or
blinding
or anti-Semitism.
Right.
You know, the anonymous nature of it, like, makes you unaccountable, which is good. You all right? You okay?
It remains to be seen.
It's good to be unaccountable if you're fighting against tyranny.
Right.
Right. It's bad to be unaccountable.
If you're fighting against misogynist movies or...
No. It's bad to be unaccountable if you are a horrible person who needs to be shamed by society. the country's id, the country's subconscious...
Ooh, the id, yeah. It just goes... spraying out all over Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah, it's completely available to you through Twitter. And so the id does not always have to be horrible, right?
Mm-hmm.
It usually is.
And that's okay. I think we need to see that raw, naked picture of our psyche, our collective psyche.
Oh, maybe. I mean, I used to
You don't
be,
have to like it, dude.
No, you don't have to like it. But I, you know, I used to be much more into the idea of being like challenged and having to see, you know, see the truth, see what's at the other end of the fork, to eat the naked lunch, you know, that whole thing. Well, or to view the naked lunch. But these days, I mean, like, I'm tired. I'm tired. And it's hard sometimes to watch someone just be horrible. There was a clip.
We've touched a nerve here, I think.
Well, the election is doing a lot to really make to make visible what was invisible, or to make textual what was subtext, right? And there's, I don't know, did you see the little clip of the tremendously tall and muscled tattooed man who was shirtless screaming, "I love Trump. Go make my tortilla. Go back to your country and build a wall and pay, build my wall and pay for it. I love Trump. I love Trump."
I have not seen that.
It's amazing, but it's also horrendous.
Yeah, you know? Horrifying. Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't want to be around. If he was screaming, "I love Hillary, you know, go steal my guns," or, you know, I cannot riff very quickly the ridiculous version of Hillary Clinton and feel comfortable with it. So I'll just say, let's pretend that Hillary Clinton
was coming to get your guns.
Is coming to get your guns and make everybody gay. Okay.
What if I don't want to be gay?
I don't. Here you go. So if someone was like, "I love Hillary, go bake my cake," go bake my cake,
Marie Antoinette.
Right?
Oh, go bake my cake, okay.
Christian for my gay wedding or something like that. If they found some kind of obstacle to their happiness, and they assumed that Hillary Clinton was the candidate that would solve everything in a brutal way, like I'm going to make this happen.
Jackbooted stormtroopers coming in there and demanding you make the cake.
"I love Hillary." You know, I would not want to be around them either. You know?
Yeah, you know, fascism is rearing its ugly head, and I'm frightened. Do people not remember history? Do people not remember that as soon as you single out a demographic and say, "Look at those people, they're to blame for our
when
life,"
I was in high school,
that you fall down the slippery slope?
When I was in high school, I was guilty of the very same thing I'm about to talk about. I did this. Calling someone wanting a particular kind of law a fascist, or calling someone who thought that...
Oh, I don't think you're a fascist if you want a particular kind of law.
I know.
But you were in high school.
I was in high school.
We were all
kind
of dorks.
I stood on a chair and I yelled at someone and called them a fascist. And it was just like, it's embarrassing.
It is.
To know
that... But you were
that,
young. You were trying to find your voice.
Yeah. It's embarrassing to know that I was that person at some time. But the term fascism has been turned into... mom and dad not letting you go out.
No, fascism was a very specific combination of a strong-arm government and industry to control the masses. I mean, it means something very specific.
Yeah, just like welfare is called socialism.
No, my parents weren't fascist by giving me a curfew when I had the car. If I didn't have the car, they didn't really care, but they wanted me in by midnight or something like that. That was, dare I say it? That was good parenting.
But the point is that the actual criticism that you can apply to Trump when he describes things like, "I'm going to make this happen because I'll be president," essentially describing the tyrannical dictatorship that everyone
Right, and those of us who understand a little about political science realize the president has extremely limited powers. Thank God.
He has a lot of image-building power. He has a lot of messaging and visioning power, right?
Yeah.
But Trump was talks often like a general.
Yes, that he's going to make Mexico pay for the wall. I don't think we have an act of Congress that allows that.
So he's doing that, and it looks and feels like fascism, right?
Well, like a dictatorship, yeah.
But to say, "Oh my God, he's a fascist," people are then like, let me be a little more circumspect. The criticism of "you're a fascist," having been used so many times for so many other things,
right,
carries so little weight.
So it's watered down. I understand.
Just like "that's racist" has turned into a kind of shorthand for "you're an asshole," which can then be defended against in the same way that "you're an asshole" can be defended against.
It's very difficult.
Well, yeah, but also like "you're an asshole," someone else can say,
"It's a fair call."
You're just mad. You're just mad at something else, you know.
Yeah.
There's no way that I am literally an asshole, right? And also, it's just your opinion.
And even metaphorically, you're not an asshole.
Exactly. So then, racist.
Yeah. My son uses "racist" way too much.
Does he?
And I think he just says, "Well, that's racist." He says something's racist if you simply refer to the issue of race.
Well,
I don't think he understands what that means.
The other flip side of that is some people say, you know, you're just saying that that's racist because I'm talking about race. Whereas what they said was, you know, I don't trust the Negroes. And then you're like, well, what's kind of racist? It's like, I'm not being racist. I'm just talking about race. Do you understand what I mean?
The last time I heard someone use that word, they were wearing a straw plantation hat and simping a mint julep.
The last time I heard someone say that word, they were on TV talking about Britain leaving the EU.
Oh, you're right. I did see that segment. Yeah,
right. So I mean, that's my point. And then there was a Jerry Seinfeld thing recently about sexism. Did you hear about this?
No. What happened?
He said that his daughter called he and his wife sexist, and it was clear. This is Seinfeld's argument. It was clear that millennials don't know anything about what actual sexism is. They're just knee-jerk saying that you can't even refer to gender.
Yes, right. You have to talk about gender. It exists.
Stop. Listen, what they said was, our daughter must be looking forward to going into the city because then she'll be able to meet boys. And their daughter said, stop that. That's sexist. And Seinfeld said publicly, so she doesn't even know what she's talking about. You know, like he declared her criticism. That's sexist as just sort of a knee jerk.
But what was the reason for her criticism? She may have had a good one.
Well, here's the thing. If you're describing someone's purpose, you know, or the reason that they're excited, like if you told your 15-year-old daughter that it'll be great when you go get a job because then you can meet your husband, or it'll be, you know, you tell your 18-year-old, good, you go to college and you'll be able to meet men so that you can get married, and someone says, that's kind of sexist, and they say, what are you talking about? I'm just talking about the way the world works, right? Then you have an argument to say, look, you've just dismissed this person's education as merely a tool to get them married. You're almost like streamlining the process.
Well, can't you get a spouse and an education? It's a twofer.
Don't be an asshole. But do you see
what
I mean?
That's a fair cop.
Yeah. Okay. Do you see what I mean? Like, to call that sexist.
Right.
One person has the idea that, oh, well, that's a ridiculous criticism. It has nothing. And the other person is trying to get a shorthand for, hey, you are ignoring the complete nature of my existence.
Yeah.
Talking about sexual compatibility or relations when I'm talking about my life makes me feel like you're not thinking of me as a person.
More than just that aspect. Right. Absolutely. But it's kind of like...
should have been a conversation, but what it turned into was a story that Jerry Seinfeld could tell about his kid.
Right, but I mean, if I'm going to allow him a little poetic license to change things,
that's okay. But he wasn't doing stand-up. He's not doing stand-up. It wasn't a joke. He was in an interview talking about, this is what I think of the millennials.
Yeah,
they're all knee-jerk about racism and sexism, and they're not thinking.
Oh, I think they're a little more oversensitive about it. But no, I like their view on things. I like their general premise that they're trying to eliminate from the ground up this institutional prejudice. And I think that you struggle with those changes, and that's okay. I love their attitude, but it's kind of like I make a lot of jokes. I make a lot of jokes about race and gender and sexuality, and you know, these people that say, "Well, I don't like these folks that are telling me that I have to embrace the gay lifestyle." I said, "No, you don't have to embrace the gay lifestyle, right?" And in fact, if you don't embrace the gay lifestyle, it doesn't make you hateful of gays. It doesn't make you anti-gay. It just makes you heterosexual. But you have to allow people that will embrace the gay lifestyle to exist and thrive in society.
You should embrace your gay loved ones.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Right. And you should embrace your loved ones, and it shouldn't be a thing
absolutely,
whether it's gay,
absolutely.
Gay or not.
But the point is, I don't have to drink Appletinis and wear skinny jeans and do that sort of thing. But I need to allow those that would choose that to do so.
Interesting.
And allow them to thrive.
Right? And you don't have to play Pokemon Go.
Right.
But
I
you have to let people play Pokemon
Go. Yeah,
it's
Pokemon Go. Like I said, it's getting my son exercise, who, by the way, and I'll put this in perspective, is now supporting Donald Trump.
What?
I think he's doing it just to piss me off.
Is he old enough to vote?
No, he's not. Thank God.
Yeah, whatever, okay.
No, but he's doing it just to piss me off, and he's rather clever. He enjoys it. That is the mind game we play.
That's kind of brilliant.
I think it's pretty good.
Except
I respect him for
it's
that.
It's also awful.
But that's what I'm saying. He realizes there are no consequences, and the thing that will give him maximum amusement at the time is watching myself and my daughter, who is old enough to vote, get angry about it. And I don't get angry about it. She'll get angry and I'll just go, he's just doing that to get you upset. And he's enjoying it. It's amusing to him.
And so when someone says, stop playing Pokemon Go, it's a child's game, you're being childish. If you just say, sure, and keep playing, that's kind of what makes them crazy, right? The critics crazy.
But that's what you should do. I mean, I just think we want to judge too much. And everyone has something they do as a distraction or for pleasure or for fun that someone else is going to think is stupid. I mean, what are the things you think are stupid that people do other than Pokemon Go?
Okay, this is a good moment to ask me, because I can say that, like, watching people insult adults playing a Pokemon Go really made me just sort of back off and say to myself, you know what? I got to stop doing that. There's no room to be dismissive of all the stuff we're talking about. Like, there's no room to be, like, a classic, I'm settling in for this one.
Okay.
That's why my chair's
creaking. You can't see this, but he's, like, bracing himself.
Nickelback.
Do a lot of people hate Nickelback?
Yes.
Okay.
Or like to perform hatred for Nickelback.
Yeah.
Nickelback's a pretty successful band.
I like some of their songs. I never understood why people hated them with such vitriol.
I mean, it just kind of happened, right? They just it was almost a perfect storm of the constructed image, the kind of smoothed out.
I still like the Monkees song.
Metal-ish,
so,
you know?
That's very constructed.
What, Monkees?
The Monkees.
The band, the Monkees?
It's totally artificial.
Oh, well, the Monkees have had a resurgence.
I actually saw them in concert just before Davy Jones died, which is sad.
So Nickelback is a band that I used to be able to kind of be like, oh, man, if you like Nickelback. Paul Ryan,
the actor?
The speaker of the house.
Oh, different guy.
Said that he liked Nickelback in one of his profiles. Okay. You remember when all those him working out photos came out?
Yeah, that was really big.
And so Nickelback was in one of his, like, I like to rock out to Nickelback. And it was sort of like, my God, did someone script this for a parody? Because that just seems like, if the overly Republican, Ayn Rand-loving, douchebag-looking Speaker of the House, or I guess he wasn't Speaker of the House at the time, but, you know,
right.
VP
Member
candidate,
of Congress, yeah.
You know, because, like, he's got this puckered face, and he's showing, like, look at my guns with the, you know, with his arm, and he's got the hat on weird, and he's pointing at the camera, all this stuff. It's like, it really looks like someone said, make yourself look like a dick, you know?
But I'm sure someone did sculpt that. And to Republicans, they love that powerful
So all
metaphor.
Of that, plus a mention of Nickelback, it was just like, oh, it's like someone threw meat into the ocean, you know? And they're like, where are the
bloody meat?
Chum for sharks, you know? We're going to need a bigger boat. But at this point, I realize now that it's so dumb to get exercised about anything like that.
Right.
Maybe if Nickelback were a overtly white supremacist band and their bland songs had lines about how you should kill other races or something like that, then it could be like, then you could hate them as much as people say they hate them.
Right. But it's just personal taste.
And oh,
there's no use getting upset about that. And there's going to be someone that doesn't like my taste. The one thing I do like about the folks in the humanities is that sometimes they're a little braver. They're willing to make an experiment. And to me, I love the original Ghostbusters. And I'm looking forward to seeing the new one. My daughter, who's a devout feminist, is very excited about female leads. And that's good. I think she should be excited about that. I just like it because someone said, hey, let's try something new and see if it works. And they did it. And even if it didn't work, I respect them for trying something new. What if you did Ghostbusters with all women?
It's fantastic.
It sounds amazing.
Ghostbusters is so high concept, you know?
What? What's high concept mean?
High concept is when you can summarize what something's about and the details don't matter.
How do you summarize Ghostbusters? This sounds like a script somebody wrote while they were stoned off their butt.
I do not understand you at this moment. I don't get you at all. It's a team of scientists who are catching ghosts. That is so high concept.
That is so high. That's what that is. Okay.
Now you're being dumb. I'm saying that.
Like, I like it.
Caddyshack is not high concept.
What? Oh, my God. That's my favorite film.
Why are you not listening to me? High concept and low concept are terms for stories. A high concept story is one where just the idea is enough. Mm. You don't need to talk about how it'll
be made.
So
wait. So the Matrix would be high concept.
I don't know about that.
What?
Because the high concept means that all you have to say, if you said big robots fighting aliens, and someone goes, I'm in, that's a illustration of high concept. If you say...
No, we're just the story idea gets
just
there.
The idea is enough, right?
Yeah, you're right. Because if I listen to weird guys in a golf course, that would not do it for me.
Yeah, right. It's like,
I learned something new today.
It's a comedy set at a golf course. Yeah. You'd be like, how is that going to work?
But I think it's brilliant. But you're right. It's
we're
just
gonna get
weird
Chevy
guys
Chase
at a golf course.
And Bill Murray and John... Is John Candy in Caddyshack?
No, it's not John Candy.
Who's the other guy? Bill Murray, Chevy Chase, and...
Ted Knight...
I feel like there's... Who's the other, like, Second City person that I'm not thinking
tell
of?
Me.
What is wrong
Brian
with
Doyle Murray was in it. Bill Murray, Caddyshack.
Well, I'm having a total brain event.
No, that's it. That's...
But yeah, so Caddyshack works because they got all these folks and they just did the scenes, right?
Yeah.
Was Harold Ramis the director?
Harold Ramis was the director.
That's who I'm thinking of then. Yeah. Okay, so Harold Ramis said, I'm just going to get these people who are good at it to do these scenes. If you...
Oh, Rodney Dangerfield.
Thank you. Jeez, what is wrong with me? So you get those...
Tell the chef I can still see the marks where the jockey was hitting it.
You get these comedians and let them do their thing.
It was so good. I'm laughing just thinking about it.
I mean, hell...
But right, there is no high concept. It's just... They could have ad-libbed this film and
if you
never know.
And then The Matrix, like you could... You kind of have to twist it a little bit. You'd be like, well...
But the idea of altered reality...
A guy is a superhero because there's two worlds. It's almost like, yeah,
okay.
Except that...
Okay. So what you're saying, low concept doesn't necessarily mean it's not a good piece of work.
No, not at all.
Gotcha.
And high concept doesn't mean that it's effective or anything like that. So Ghostbusters, being pretty high concept, just do it a different way. It's interesting that way, right? Whereas, you know, with Caddyshack... You wouldn't say, oh, let's do Caddyshack with women and have that be the thing. It's like, hey, let's do Caddyshack.
I'm imagining it with women.
With
it sounds hilarious.
It does, but let's do Caddyshack with a completely different set of really excellent comedic actors. And then you would get a completely different.
But I
want to
see Melissa McCarthy with Susie, be the ball. No.
You know what's high concept?
What?
Jane Bond.
James Bond. That's all you got to do is Bond in a new thing.
But make it Jane Bond.
Jane Bond. Yeah, why not?
Gillian Anderson as Bond. That's a high concept kind of thing.
Have we done women as secret agents? We did a really interesting one with Bridget Fonda.
That was a remake of a French film.
What was the name of the film?
La Femme Nikita, which was then remade into Point of No Return.
Oh, so that you're right. It was based on La Femme Nikita.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool.
Two good films, actually.
Yeah. Anyway, the point is... Ghostbusters, it's perfect. Yeah, remake it with a flipped gender cast.
We have to experiment. We have to experiment. And sometimes the experiment is a failure, and that's okay. You learn from it, move on. I don't care if you remake Ghostbusters with chimps. It might work. Yep. I might be willing to watch that.
You know what would be a good what someone should redo, like swap?
What?
And this is a race thing as opposed to a gender thing, but I think someone should do The Wiz white.
I'm afraid we're going to have to put you to death just for the comments.
Come on. That's a classic joke. Let's record another outro.
Okay.
Consilience with Pete and Charlie is a podcast about the intersection of science and the humanities. Why? This feels so fake.
Do it anyway.
Find us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter, Bennett Radio and Pete Ludovus.
Or you can find us on the back porch at Rocky Mountain Pizza in Midtown Atlanta drinking cheap beer.